You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Minister of Defense, my tequila drinking buddy. Ate a lot of meals at your house, boy. If it wasn't for you, I'd have been on the street.
The Showtime Podcast with Michael Cooper is brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network.
I am so excited because through my 12 Laker years, I only played for one team. I had a lot of teammates that I had. But this young man is probably the funniest, the most knowledgeable, a true friend. I can say this, that I saw this young man come into the league at an early age, and I got a chance to see him leave as a legendary Hall of Fame player. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my friend, my comrade. He was always there with me. I got some stories to tell you about the Detroit Pistons series when they beat us in 89. Big Game, James Worthy. Thank you for being with us today.
The Minister of Defense, my tequila drinking buddy. Ate a lot of meals at your house, boy. If it wasn't for you, I'd have been on the streets.
I tell you what, a little secret about James. James loves hot food. He loves spicy food, Mexican food. He used to come to our house and eating, my wife back then would cook some hot tamales burritos.
Burritos.
James would literally have to give him a towel, a face towel to eat, because he would be eating and sweating like he was playing basketball and posting the Celtics up.
to this day. Hey, Coop, you still got that Trans Am?
No, I don't. I got rid of that. You know, as we grow older and get up there in age, you got to get more stable. So, no, I have just a basic car now, James.
That was classic, man.
Well, thank you. So, James, let's open this up. First, let's talk about home life, okay? You're from Gastonian. Tell us what it was like growing up and getting into basketball at an early age.
Coop, I grew up in a very small town. You know, I am from the South, country, dirt road, man. I grew up on a dirt road. About 35,000 people back then. So there were limited resources, not a lot to do. Went to church a lot, you know, went to the park a lot. That was about it. Boys Club kind of saved our lives as far as having any type of away from home organization. That was it. So you put yourself into sports. We didn't have a lot of gangs and you know, other things to get into other than sports. Maybe you played in the school band or, you know, participated in the church choir, that kind of thing. Wasn't a lot of options, but sports was one. And I remember being like 5'11 in the sixth grade, man. And then when I came back in the seventh grade, I was like 6'1, 6'2. By the eighth grade, I was 6'6, 6'7 by the eighth grade. So I let go of football, you know, because I was too big of a target, and My dad made me quit because we didn't have insurance for that. You know, you might try to break a leg, man. You just Robitussin had to take care of, you know what I mean? So I just became interested in basketball, man. That was it for me. I was really shy. You remember when I came to the Lakers, I wasn't that outspoken as I am now. But growing up, it was worse. I was really shy. And I found that through sports, especially through basketball, I could express myself, you know, when I was on the court. So I wasn't that good at first. I was really tall and skinny. And, you know, my friends my age wouldn't let me play with them because I was tall. I could dominate. So I had to play with guys a little older than me, you know, 12 years old. I'm playing with guys 15, 16. You know, they're talking about, you know, sex and smoking cigarettes and stuff. And here I am, this little shallow 12-year-old. But that's how I got into it, man. And then I found out I could get a scholarship. Listen, that's when I really got serious about it.
Okay, so at that early age, when you growing up, who was that nemesis or that person that used to torment you when you were like an 8th, 9th, 10th grader back in the school days?
A guy named Bubba Wilson, okay? Thomas Wilson was his real name, but we call him Bubba. And to this day, you know, he's been my most inspirational player because he was like a junior in high school, and I was like in the 8th grade. And Coop, he played at Western Carolina, and then he played for the Golden State Warriors for maybe about a month before I think Al Addles let him go. But he was my guy, man. He didn't have a lot of talent, you know, but he was strong and physical and played. He was kind of like a Dennis Rodman type player. So I give all that credit, you know, to Thomas Wilson. You know, when I was down. I was getting beat up by older guys. You know, he would always say, come on, young fella, you know, kind of like you. Come on, young fella, keep going, keep it going. So, yeah, man, Bubba Wilson, man, good brother.
James, listen, you know, you have many people that we come across in our young age. I had some people. What do you think is the difference on why we made it and other players that came along that same road didn't make it?
Well, you know, it's like the people around us, I think, you know, having, you know, a good support system, that helps a little bit. But I think we made the sacrifices, you know. There were times when we wanted to go to the mall, you know, we went to the court, you know. We understood what the coaches wanted. You can't have five Kareem Abdul-Jabbars on the court. You can't have five, you know, Magic Johnson. So you're a prime example of that. You said, okay, even though you could score, I remember you dropping 42 in a game, even though you could, your chances were better if you go out there and lock somebody up because you knew there's going to be a lot of guys that could score. So I think understanding that, you know, Kareem had 4 years of college. You had three or four years. I had three. So I think that helped getting the science and the theory down. And college, so you didn't have to be taught as much when you got to the pros. So I think, you know, just making those little sacrifices, working hard, that did
it. So as we make those sacrifices, and now, like you said, going from high school to college, now you had two big universities in your state, North Carolina State, UNC, North Carolina. Why did you pick UNC?
Well, I was young, Coop. I had two older brothers, as you know. 8, 9 years older than me. So there was a lot of commotion going on in the house. I was like 7 or 8 years old. I didn't really know what was going on. And I heard my dad say, that's a cool white man right there. And I didn't understand what was going on. The civil rights was going on right now. A lot of racism crap was going on in the South. And I heard my dad say that. And then I later found out that Coach Dean Smith had it recruited and signed the first black player to the ACC, and it was Charlie Scott. So I always kind of was conscious of Coach Smith, and he almost lost his job behind that. Had a couple losing seasons and finally caught on. So I started going to basketball camp there early in the 8th grade, and I just fell in love with, you know, Walter Davis and Phil Ford. Mitch Kupchak was down there. I just kind of dug the campus. I made some visits, you know. David Thompson played at North Carolina State. I was also a big fan of his.
Yeah, big
fan. Yeah, man, when they won in 1974. But, you know, Coach Smith won me over, Phil Ford and those guys, and so I chose North Carolina.
So if there was, like, let's say two things that Coach Smith left with you before you left college, what would those two things be?
You know, be grateful, man. Coach Smith was a great basketball coach, but he really was a life preparer. You know, he kind of prepared you for if you didn't make it in basketball. And he really cared about people, being conscious of your community, all the things that, you know, we do as athletes. And, you know, respect the history. That's one thing he always, you know, respect the history. Someone, you know, paved the way for us to come along. So he was always conscious of guys like Charlie Scott and Earl Lloyd and people who made those sacrifices, you know, before we were able to.
You know, James, you talk about so many great players that's come through that program. You've already mentioned a couple, but I'm going to mention a couple more. Sam Perkins, Vince Carter, Al Wood, all players like that. Where would you rank yourself amongst those players?
I'm better than all of them, Cooper.
That's my worthy right there.
I was Dean Smith's favorite son. No, you know, obviously, you know, Michael Jordan was a freshman my last year. And in the documentary, I talked about how I was better than him for about 2 weeks. So, I mean, I think overall, Michael gets that, you know. But Vince Carter, you know, great player. Charlie Scott doing his time. But I put myself in the top five, Coop. Mm-hmm. I was the first, you know, our team with MJ and Sam were the first to win a championship for Coach Smith. You know, mm-hmm. he had been to the Final Four several times. And we lost to Indiana in 1981 against Isaiah Thomas and Bobby Knight and that crew.
That Kent Benson on that team?
Nah, Kent Benson was on the 76 team.
Okay, before, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They went undefeated that year.
Yeah.
But Isaiah Thomas, Landon Turner, Whitman, Coach Whitman was on that team. Mm-hmm. Roy Tolbert, they had a pretty good team. But we rarely do you get to go back to the Final Four back to back. So we were able to go back the next year. We had a little bit more incentive, and we won Coach Smith's first championship for him. So, yeah.
Now, was he a big fundamental coach? I mean, did he use you guys as athleticism, or was it more basic fundamental teamwork?
Yeah, you know, the joke is, you know, who's the only guy to be able to hold Michael Jordan to 14 points average? It's Coach Smith. Yeah, especially back then, Coop, when I played, didn't have a shot clock. So we literally used to practice with the medicine ball sometimes. If you thought you were putting it on the floor too much or too much iso, pass and move. You know, he had the full corner. So it was a lot of teamwork. Didn't really believe in iso, you know, let the game come to you. But, you know, he had some tools if he needed the iso and, you know, obviously with Rasheed Wallace and myself, Michael, if he needed to. But it was a lot of team ball. Michael didn't really get to explode till after he left North Carolina. Michael came to us a better baseball player, actually, when he was coming out of high school and had a lot of raw talent, man, like super raw talent. But he hadn't actually put the science and the theory of the game. Like, he utilized all his energy all the time. And so once he, you know, learned how to let the game come to him a little bit, learned how to use a pick, learned how to know where to get his shots, what spots were his hot spots, and how to play defense to his advantage. There's a lot of things that Coach Smith brought to him. But when he first came to us, he was one of the most confident freshmen I've ever seen, you know, a bully, trying to intimidate, seeking out the best player on the team, which was me at the time, Sam Perkins and I. And he just consistently, relentless, you know, physically wanted to play one-on-one, talking trash. You could see it then. If he lost a game of backgammon, it was like he had lost a game seven of an NBA championship. I'm serious, man. The guy was so crazy about losing. And we had a running program where the small guards were running group A. They had the quickest time. We had to run these 220s. And the small guards had like 28 seconds to run their 220. And the small forwards had like 30 seconds. And then the centers had like 35 seconds. Well, Michael was in that middle group. And, of course, the guards, they were always talking trash. Well, you got three more seconds to make your time. So Michael went to Coach Smith, and he said, Coach, put me in running group A, please. And he went in running group A and just dusted their asses, man. He was running his in 25 seconds. You know, looking back at them, running past the finish line backwards and stuff. That's how he was, man. We'd be practicing, and we'd be tired. Coop, you know how it is when you just want to get off the court, man. And I'd be walking off the court, and here comes Michael, man, pushing me back on the court. Where you going, big guy? You scared? You know, he was always trying to test you. So that was his attitude. I knew he was going to be an all-star, but I didn't know he was going to be what he turned out to be, arguably the best ever played a game.
Well, you know what, that work ethic that everybody puts into it, yourself, Magic, late, great Kobe Bryant, those are some of the things that you see that turns good players into great players, into legendary players. So you finish up that last season, you guys win a tournament. Did you think, again, coming into the NBA, that you would be drafted by the Lakers, or did you think you would go to another team?
Well, at the time, Coop, remember, there was no big lottery. Mm-hmm. So the Lakers got the number one draft pick by trading Don Ford and Chad Kent to the Cleveland Cavaliers in 1976 or 77.
Yep.
And that's when Cleveland was at the top of the league. So nobody expected Cleveland to spiral down to the bottom of the league. So at the time, the team that got the number one draft pick was the team that had the draft pick was the Lakers, who had it via that trade, and the team who had the worst record, which was the Clippers at the time. They tossed a coin, Coop, and that's how they decided who got the number one draft pick. So Ralph Sampson decided to stay in school at Virginia. What a big mistake that was, in my opinion.
You get a chance for him, great for you.
Oh, man, you get a chance to come play with Kareem. Yeah, imagine what his outcome would have been.
No, I'm talking about.
He decided to come out. Are you guys still there?
Yeah, we're here, Jay. Go ahead.
Okay. Imagine what his outcome would have been had he come to the Lakers. So when he decided to stay, I decided to come out after winning the championship and being the most outstanding player and Coach Smith encouraging me to put my name into the draft. Well, we kind of already knew that the Lakers didn't need anybody. You guys had just won two championships out of 3 years, 80 and 82. It wasn't like you guys even needed it. So Jerry West was looking for somebody that fit. He really didn't need a scorer like Dominique Wilkins was a human highlight scorer. You know, that may have worked out, maybe not. Terry Cummins, pretty good player, stronger than me, really couldn't run the lane. He wanted someone that would fit in and be a team player. And that's where I came from Coach Smith. So that's why I kind of knew that the Lakers were interested. I knew the Clippers wouldn't pick me. They would go after Dominique or Terry Cummins. So it was a perfect situation. So when I came to the Lakers, you know, I thought I was pretty good. You know, I'm just coming out of college. I had no idea what the NBA was all about. And I had played with Walter Davis and Mitch Kupchak and those guys in the summer, but I still hadn't been with the team. So, but when I came to the Lakers, I was kind of full of myself a little bit. I was very confident. So I walk in the gym, you know, and I'm thinking, look, I can start here. I don't know why I had that in my mind, but, you know, most dumb rookies kind of think that way. So I came in the gym. I looked at Kareem. I was like, yeah, Kareem's his spot secure. Magic spot secure. You know, Jamal Wilkes was still with us. He was a small forward. And the reason I wore 52 in college, and the reason I changed to 42 was because Silk had that number.
Yep.
And I wanted Jackie Robinson's number. But anyway, I looked at Silk. I said, nah, I can't get that. Nah. And then Norm Nixon. I said, Norm Nixon was still with me. And then I looked over there, and I said, fucking Kurt Rambis. You know? I said, the fucking guy can't jump. He can't
run. The Jake Douglas, the role players.
And I said, you know, he had these glasses on that had duct tape keeping them together. He smelled like Ben Gay all the time and had all this apparatus on and stuff. I was like, I can kick his ass. I'm going to get that spot. Well, let me tell you something. Within like 35 minutes of those first couple of days of practice, Kurt Rambis let me know what a real power forward was in the NBA. Oh, man, he beat the crap out of me, you know. All that talent, all that quickness, all that didn't mean nothing when you got down in the paint with Kurt, man. So I went over there and sit my ass down behind Coop and McAdoo for a couple of years till some time came available. But that was my intro to the NBA. Kurt Rambis beating the hell out of me.
Grand slams, no-hitters, and double plays are back. No better place to get in on the MLB action than FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook and official partner of Major League Baseball. And new customers in Mass can get in on the action with $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet and sign up at FanDuel.com/Boston. Finally, you can bet on all your favorite sports from the money line to point spreads to player props and more. So bet now on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Don't miss your chance to get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. Visit FanDuel.com/Boston and make every moment more. FanDuel, official partner of Major League Baseball. You must be 21 or older and present in Massachusetts to participate. A $10 initial deposit is required. Your first online bet must be a real money wager. Bonuses are issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Hope is here. Go to gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. Go to gamesedsma.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Hey, you listening to Showtime with Coop Podcast, with sharing some insightful BS with some of my legends and NBA players. J-Dub, what are your thoughts? And this is one thing I always tell everybody, especially with the Los Angeles Lakers. Jerry West had the special innate ability to go out and get that one player, such as yourself. He drafted me. He traded Norm and got Byron Scott. What are your thoughts about Jerry West and his ability to transform that team into a legend?
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Legendary team.
Yeah, Jerry West can do on the phone in 10 minutes what it takes most GMs to, you know, 3 or 4 months to do. Coop, I tell you what he did for me. I was really quick, had a lot of talent. But, you know, once you're in the NBA, you get exposed. Yeah. You know, I play on my back to the basket. And I could usually beat my man. But when you beat your man and all of a sudden you turn into Mark Eaton or you turn into Manute Bol or somebody like that. So Jerry West sent me to Pete Newell's camp. And he said, James, you got to face up. And that's when I started to hit the jump a little bit. But he has the ability to see things that other people can't see. He sees the missing pieces. Most people would have gone after, you know, Dominique Wilkins, you know, just to get a chance. But he saw that that's not what the Lakers needed, you know. They needed somebody to fit in, have a good attitude, show up. Not that Dominique doesn't have all of that. But he also, Coop, understands what makes the engine work. got to have a good battery. Got to have a good spark plug.
Yep.
Got to have a good carburetor. You got to have, you know, good oil, all that. You just can't have one good battery, one good engine. Everything's got to be perfect, and they have to sink in together. And that's what he's good at, man. I haven't seen any other GM that has that ability. And, you know, as far as, in my opinion, what I saw, you know, he put that whole Laker organization together. I know Dr. Buss was very insightful and other guys, but Jerry West was, you know, he was key. A.C. Green, who would ever thought that? You know, bringing guys like Larry Spriggs and Mike McGee off the bench, you know, when we needed them for 3 or 4 minutes. So he had a special ability to see what the team needed and had a good pulse of what the team was.
And Jerry also had that ability to, when there was friction or something going on with star players or key players, and you can talk about Shaq and Kobe, he always could sit those players down and get them to buy into team, what it was all about. And that was the one thing I really appreciated about Jerry, because he was like a dad to all of us.
He was. And a lot of the things that we wore on our shoulders, on our sleeve, he had already worn on his.
Yep.
So, you know, back in the 60s when Elgin Baylor was his guy, kind of helped him intro him to the – so he kind of knew, and, you know, you always saw him standing up there watching everything. You know, he knew when you had a rough day at home or if you were moody. He kind of knew, and he'd pull you in, you know. He kind of knew what was happening. And, you know, Jerry was great, man. You know, he knew how to bounce players off of each other, you know. He was good. And you know, he was also good at, you know, not over celebrating. You know, we'd win like 7 games in a row, and, you know, he was never happy unless we were lost the 2. You know, he said, well, you guys are winning, without playing your best, you know. So he always kept us abreast. You know, we never really had to worry about, you know, being complacent or, you know, things like that with Jerry around.
So you come into the Laker team, and we really loved having you there. James was the type of player that just I've never seen anybody really, truly work hard in practice. I think Magic did it. I mean, we all did it. But Worthy was that player that practiced just as hard as he did when he played the game. But you come to the Lakers having a pretty good rookie season, and then you break your leg. Did you ever think you would come back from that?
Yeah, I thought I did. You know, once I saw the diagnosis, you know, you know, I never had any, you know, I had the metal put in my leg, and the rehab was pretty easy for me because I was still young. You know, I was like 21. So everybody remembers the great Clive Brewster.
Yeah.
You know, he was one of the best. Before Gary Vee, he was the best, you know, physical therapist in the world. So the thing is, you know, with Clyde, he's gonna implement a lot of pain to you. So you're ready to get the hell out of there, man. You either gonna suffer his pain or you gonna go back. But nah, seriously, yeah. I thought I'd come back once they told me if I worked hard with the rehab. So that was huge for me because that, you know, I had just started to gel with the team around April 13th or 14th, and I was like really upset, but, you know, I snapped back from it, thank God.
You know, I always think that things like that happen for a reason, because when I first got with the Lakers, James, in 79, I tore my knee in summer league. So I think things happen for a reason. Had I not gotten hurt, they would have had to get rid of me because they had so many veterans. So that was truly a blessing in disguise. James, we're at the part of my show that we call Lightning Round. I'm going to ask you I'm going to ask you a couple of names and just throw out a couple of sentences about them, okay? First one will be Kevin McHale.
Kevin McHale.
And they don't have to be nice, J-Dub.
Nah.
We just want to hear the truth.
Kevin McHale. Here it is. You ring.
you already ring. Talked about D. Smith. How about your parents, your mom and dad?
You're going to make me cry now. Outstanding humanitarians, Coop. Just a love for people. And that's, you know, they had three kids. And I guess the key word that all of us could use is major sacrifice.
Yep, that's a good major one. Major sacrifice. Dominique Wilkins.
Huge competitor. We were in the same high school class, 1979, in North Carolina, but we never got to play against each other. So I was always his biggest competitor. And we beat them in college. We played them. But the human highlight film, I would say biggest high school competitor.
Magic. And you can't say Magic without saying Kareem.
Magic, the enhancer. If I had to choose one player to start my team in the whole wide world, you know, Kareem obviously is dominant, but if I had to pick one player, I would have to pick Magic, because he gonna make everybody get theirs. He gonna enhance everybody. And Kareem, when I think of Kareem, I think historian, because he's way smarter academically than he is a basketball player, if you can imagine that. So historian, and of course, poetry in motion.
For sure. You know, I was gonna say Michael Jordan, but you already told us a little bit about him. So this next thing is a place. It's not a person, okay? The Forum Club.
Secrets.
Enough said. You listening to
Forum Club? Magical, mystical, explosive, explosive.
You said enough right there.
Boom!
Showtime with Coop Podcasts, sharing some insightful BS with my friends. Hey, James. Okay, so we finally win a championship. You come to the Lakers, and now we're playing that team that I hate the most, because I'm from Los Angeles. I grew up watching Jerry and Wilt and Elgin not being able to get over the hump, and we're playing them in 1984. And obviously we lose to them that season, but eventually we come to 85 and we finally beat the Boston Celtics. We don't have a special guest in on that, but share your thoughts that 84 going into the 85 season.
Well, for me, 84 was kind of a breaking out for me. I had missed the playoffs the year before. It was my first playoffs. We're playing the Boston Celtics. Now, I remember preseason, Commissioner Stern trying to hype this up. You remember, I think we played them four times.
Yep, that year.
Two on the West Coast. We got the big TV contract. You know, Coop, I grew up, my brothers went to North Carolina Central, a small historical black school in Durham, North Carolina. Sam Jones happened to play there. So we love Sam Jones. I was a little earlier. So the Celtics used to come on. I was a huge Paul Sowers fan growing up. So, but that changed, obviously. So in 84, and I want Cedric to hear this, because I handed him the most valuable player award.
Hey, Cedric, be quiet and let James finish.
Hold on. In game two, I handed him the most valuable player. Otherwise, it would have gone to a Laker. When I made that pass to Gerald Henderson, and we gave him that game. Because we go back 2-0, I think the chances are he wouldn't have been MVP. So he never thanked me, but maybe he will on this podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our conversation. Cedric Cornbread Maxwell. Max, how you doing?
I am doing fine, gentlemen. I heard all these stories you guys were telling. I mean, they were really good with James and listening to it. You guys kept talking about Jerry West, and I love the fact that you said Jerry West was this great architect, but did you guys forget about Red Auerbach, what he did?
Really didn't do nothing for us. He didn't do nothing for us.
You're talking about a great architect of teams, but, you know, I'm going to tell you this right now. This ain't going to be no damn love fest over here. We ain't going back and forth. And, you know, I'm going to say this to James, first of all. I admired him as a college player. Loved him. I saw him playing. I saw all these different things he did. And then, damn it, he went to the dark side. That is what really pissed me off.
No, you went to the dark side. That's the blue over there. What are you talking about?
And next thing I know, I'm watching James in college. I'm like, damn, this dude's pretty good from Gastonia, you know, right down the street from UNC Charlotte. So I heard about James. Matter of fact, James, I'll say this. There was a guy who told me a story about 2 or 3 years ago. He comes, tells me, and says, let me tell you something. When you guys were in college, James Worthy came over there as a high schooler and kicked you guys' ass. I said, are you crazy? I was an All-American. James Worthy was in high school. Do you think that really happened? But it was really something just to watch you play and watch you develop over the years. And you said you gave me the MVP. I tell you what I love. I love watching you grow as a player after I got through playing you, and watch how you just took everything to a whole nother level.
Well, Cedric, you know, man, I go way back with you, bro. I know you from Kingston, North Carolina. I was from Gastonia, North Carolina. You're a few years older than me. And so the boys club in our little hometown, we only had Belmont Abbey, Gardner Webb, Barber Scotia, and then UNCC. So I was a huge Cornbread Maxwell fan. Like, we came to see you guys play Robert Parrish one night.
Wow.
In the Charlotte Coliseum. You remember that?
Yeah, yeah. We had a sellout.
Yeah, double zero. We were sitting right behind the basket. I watched your every move. To me, you were the first guy to handle the ball, a big guy before I saw Magic. Okay, yeah. Y'all ran a kind of a four corners too. So I saw you guys wax set Robert Parrish, and I was like, man, UNCC. I thought I might be going to UNCC, or you from Gastonia. So we go way back, man. So, but then you became a Celtic.
And now that's where the good part starts.
All that has changed.
So, J-Dub, 1985 yeah. come. You handed him the MVP, but we came back with a vengeance. Had that first game that was just scared everybody, but we settled ourselves down, and then you went to whipping Max's ass in 85.
Yeah. Max, I don't know if Max played that much in 85.
Thank you. Thank you, James.
That's his fault. Don't worry about that.
I was hurt that year. I didn't even play. I played maybe in that game, in that series, I played maybe about 30 minutes total the entire game. Now, in game 7, in 1984, when we played you guys, I played 40 minutes in that game against your guy, James. And that is when I used to say about James Worthy, everybody asked me today, and I won't say it behind your back, I'll say it in your face. At that time, you weren't big game James, you were little game James. Now, you grew into big game James, especially after we stopped playing you guys. And the one thing I always remember this guy told me, he talked to you and he said, James, he said, what player gets, you think about all the time. He said, well, there's this one guy. He's not the best player in the world, but damn it, when I play damn Cornbread Maxwell, I stay up nights dreaming about how am I going to go at him. I said, really?
That just goes to show you that Larry and Mikhail wasn't all that. You know what I'm saying? Nah, I admired your game. You were tough. I can't take nothing away from you in 84. You never had me in your back pocket, but you were a force, man. That's all I'm gonna say about that.
Well, the one thing I always remember, and that's why I said you were better than that. There was a game in 84 that we played you guys. When we played you in the championship that year, I go in for a layup, and I'm in the air, and you two-hand push me in the back into the stanchions.
Yeah.
I said, this dude is, you are better than that. And I can understand you. But that's when I knew that you had kind of lost your cool, because that's not the kind of player you were.
Well,
Max, we were fighting fire with fire. Go ahead, J-Dub.
What's that, Coop?
I said, we were fighting fire with fire. Y'all was pushing and banging on us. We did the same. Go ahead, Clever.
The thing was, that wasn't our style, Coop. You know, our style was getting up and down the court. Nobody really, had interrupted that. And I think, that's one of those old radar back strategies. They know they couldn't keep up with us.
Exactly. Right.
You know, They sent in old fucking Craig Kite, you know, used his six file, Scott Wedman, you know. So it worked because, you know, it's like when you're playing on those old schoolyards, somebody hits you, you're going to hit back. And it kind of took us out of that game. I would never push anybody in the back. But I was new to this. I felt like I got in Kurt Rambis's way when McHale sidelined Kurt like that. My peripheral vision saw somebody coming, and I interrupted that. But I'm not going to apologize for pushing you in the back because you didn't get hurt. But if you had gotten hurt, I'm going to apologize. Hey, wait. I knew what I was doing. I saw the pads there, bro. I knew you was going into the bad set.
I said of all the players on that team, and I'll tell you a story. This is one of my favorite Lakers stories, and this is why I love Pat Riley. We were playing you guys at that time, we played you guys in exhibition games. And so it was some game, and I heard Larry Spriggs over there. He was screaming and yelling at me, sitting on the sideline. The ball goes out of bounds near Pat Riley. I get the ball. The referee's about to hand me the ball. And I told him, hey, hold up a minute. Hold up. And he looks at me, and Pat Riley's standing beside me. I said, Pat, do me a favor. Put one of them motherfuckers in down there, would you? And he said, Spring, go in the game. He went in to guard me. I scored about 6 points. I said, the next time people are out here working, you need to sit your ass down. He went back to the bench. I never heard another word. So I do appreciate Pat Riley.
J-Dub, one of your favorite moments against the Celtics.
Well, you know, I think, you know, obviously.
You better not say that dunk on me. You better not say when you dunk on me. I swear to God, you better not say.
Oh, thank you for reminding me man.
You better not say that, dude.
Thank you, Cedric. I wasn't going to say anything about that till he said I had me in his back pocket. So I think, Coop, overall, man, you know, when I think of Elgin Baylor, when I think of Happy Harrison, who's from North Carolina, when I think of all the fans, and, you know, Jerry, Wilt, those guys that never won a championship. I mean, not only were we representing ourselves, but we were representing a lot of hurt hearts over the 60s, you know. So, and then we're the only team to have won on that parquet floor.
Yep.
To me, that more than anything, more than any one play, that kind of is going to hold. You know, a lot of history there. You know, Coach Dr. Buss made that statement after we won, let it be known that it can never be said again. So I think to me, because Boston was kind of a shitty town to play in, man. The fans were tough. The fans were tough. My uncle lived there during the busing year. So I know, I knew Boston, man. So some of the phone calls we used to get, you know, so. But it's a beautiful city, some beautiful people there, some beautiful history if you're into that.
Yeah.
But it was a tough place to play. They had really good fans. I always compare Boston and New York fans. They kind of know the game, and they appreciate the game when you bring it. I remember them applauding Kareem and giving us a hand. So to me, that stands out bigger than anything because nobody else has ever won in that building.
You know what? No, I'm going to tell you this. This is the one thing that really bothered me about Lakers-Celtics. And it hurt me because as a Celtic player, our blackness was challenged. And that was one of the things that really bothered me about the Lakers-Celtics. We had great black players, but we weren't identified in that way. And I remember Cooper saying to, you know, talking about my guy ML Carr, calling him Fiddler, like he was in Roots or something. and I hated that. I hated the fact that it was, I understood how it was a black-white game, but it was like you were challenging the other players who were black on our team. Like we weren't black enough to be, you know, playing against you guys. And that bothered me.
I think Boston's history kind of, you know, I don't think intentionally, but I think the history of Boston and some of the things that we experienced, man, I got some tough phone calls, man. This is after telling the operator to hold our phones, but I understand your point. Playing for that team, you know, it's the same thing in the Spike Lee movie, you know, Do the Right Thing. It was either Bird, you know, it was just you're black or you're white, no matter what race you are. But the one thing I always admired about Red Auerbach is, you know, and I believe he's a Jewish gentleman, is during the time when the NBA really didn't want to, you know, bring black players in, he brought us in. He brought Bill Russell, you know, Casey Jones, you know, Sam Jones. And, you know, during the time when the NBA was predominantly white, to a town that was, you know, had a lot of issues as well. So I'd always, my college coach explained that to me about Red Auerbach before I became a NBA player, because Coach Smith was very, he was very conscious like that. So I do give Red Auerbach for bringing in those guys. And then Bill Russell stood for all the things that we needed to learn about life, civil rights, stuff like that. So he was an outspokesman guy in a setting that really wasn't set up for that. So I do give Red credit for that.
And James, well, you know what? And I'll say this about Red, too, which I love, again, about the racial or the black-white issue, is that Red was about winning. He was about bringing a good product to Beantown, and the fans were very rabid about that. And he didn't care who got it done, as long as they got it done for the Celtics. So that's a good point you made. Cedric?
Why did you challenge our blackness?
Because
let me say this in front of, as black as he is, he gonna challenge our black.
Listen, I was trying to get under y'all skin, and it definitely worked, because you still carrying that load today.
The thing that I love, and you know, everybody always says, well, you didn't get along with this, didn't like these guys. Well, we really didn't, and I don't think nothing was wrong with it at that time. You know, it wasn't nothing wrong with it. I hated Tragic Johnson. I hated all the things that the Lakers stood for at that time. But I appreciated the competition that we had against you guys. The thing I believe, and I've told Cooper this, I said, James, when we played you guys in 84, you guys were a better team. But you weren't, I don't think you were mentally as tough as we were at that time. But what you did, what we made you do at that time, and you thank me for this. Well, you should thank me for this, the fact that you guys went on to be the dominant team, because you guys didn't take any crap after you played us. It was like, look, damn, you know, forget about all this other stuff. If you want to play rough, we can play rough. You want to play soft, we can play soft. And so I think that is what I think the gift that we gave you guys after we played you in 84 and during those times when it was the Lakers and the Celtics.
It was definitely a lesson learned. The Celtics has had a brand of basketball over time. You know, Bill Russell was a defensive physical player, Nelson, all those guys. Over time, that was a brand that had won all those championships. The Lakers had a style that just started in 1982 when Magic came. So they beat Philly a couple times. This is from my perspective, because I was a Philly fan back, Dr. J, and you know, Cunningham, Bobby Jones.
Don't say that, man.
I'm just saying, the Carolina guys, Bobby Jones, Cunningham, and Doc, you know. But so the Lakers were still developing. They had the Showtime, but then I came in as a young player, you know. Michael Thompson came, so I think you might be right there. It was a lesson learned. Even Pat Riley said, you guys knocked us off our feet. You guys were better adapters at the time. We didn't adapt to you guys as physical play till the next season. You know, 84, you guys just kept bringing it to us. We kept trying to compete that way instead of getting back to our norm. So, yeah. And, you know, we didn't – I ain't gonna say we hated each other. Like, I wore New Balance shoes as a rookie, and the guy that introduced me to New Balance was ML Carr, right there in Boston. I didn't know Amel, but I knew he went to Guilford College. My brothers used to go see him play. So there's a connection. You know, we didn't hate each other, but that's the way it was back in the 80s. You weren't being friends with guys, you know, back in those days.
You know what? Let me tell you what Michael Cooper said to me one time, and I'll never forget this. I was in the parking lot. This is when I got traded to the Clippers. I was on the parking lot, and we were playing the Lakers that night. And after the game, I was out there talking to a young lady. And, you know, she left. And Cooper was walking by. He said, "Yo, man, leave our hoes alone." This dude ain't know me like that. I mean, it was, like, really? This dude came at me like that.
Big game, you don't hear me saying that, do you?
What? One thing about Coop, and Coop don't mean it. But he will say it. He don't mean it, though.
Well, he came right at me like that. And I was like, and there's really something to see really how once I came to the Clippers and to see how disrespected the Clippers were at that time. I was playing against you guys, and obviously it was a foul, and guy fouled me. And I'm looking at the referee like, damn, you know, you're going to make that call. He looked at me and said, "You don't play for the Celtics no more."
I'm going to say this. My one defining moment, and Max, you did hit it on the head, is that you guys made us a better team. But where it really became a reality for me is losing you guys in 84, we come back in 85, and that first game was a Boston massacre. And I'll never forget that game because right after that game, Pat Riley takes us into the locker room, and he just destroys this board. We go straight to the conference room, and he destroys this board, and he tells us, "We will not ever lose like that again." And I think that was the eye-opening experience for me, that we had to change our mental toughness attitude as far as being a finesse team into being a mentally tough physical team. And to me, that's when we took it to another level, because we came back, we ended up winning that 85 championship, and that kind of set us on the mark that we did. Other one I love is that we're the first team, because Boston has set such a high standard of winning 16 championships and so many in a row. 88 was good for me because we were the first team in 16 years to go back-to-back wins in championship year.
Well, the thing I'm looking at now is that picture of Kareem behind you. And Kareem was my favorite player, James. And, you know, I wore 33 in college. And I'm playing against him in one of my first games in the NBA. And I'm playing pretty well. And all of a sudden, Cap comes down and elbows me in the stomach. I looked at him, man. I'm like, it didn't hurt me. It didn't hurt me physically, but it hurt my damn feelings. Because he was my favorite player of all time, elbowing me for no reason.
Straight up.
Over that. I was like, damn, this dude just elbowed me for no reason. And it was like I was just torn. And I ended up playing with Kareem. We played after he retired. We went over to Europe. We played against the Gold Trotters. And that's the first time I got the chance really to actually sit down and talk to him. And I always remember how intelligent people said he was. But until I got the chance to sit down and talk to him and break bread, was the first time I really got a true appreciation for, in my respect. Everybody talks about Jordan being the greatest of all time. Jordan was great. There's no question. But I look at Hakeem Olajuwon dominated the game more than anybody I think I've ever seen play the game, offensively and defensively. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was just one of a kind when you think about what he was able to do and as long as he was able to do it.
You see, Max carries a lot of personal baggage with him, so his feelings are still hurt quite a bit. But last couple of things for J-Dub. Tell us about what you're doing in the community.
Well, I go back to Gastonia, man. That's why I started my humanitarian work first. We had a small foundation there, and we dealt with a lot of veterans that come back at the foundation. So in my hometown, if you don't go to college, you know, you don't get a lot of exposure. A lot of guys go to the military. Some guys go to the military as a dentist. They come back. They're missing a few certifications. We deal with homeless stuff, trying to get housing and find them jobs and things of that nature. I also do a scholarship at my high school under my mother's name, Gladys Worthy. I also do a scholarship at Sleepy Forest High School, too. So, and out here in Los Angeles, man, we deal with special needs kids, and we blend them with high-risk kids in a basketball league. You know, we put like six people on the floor with two mentors, with the focus being on the mentors. We try to get the guys that fell through the cracks. A lot of them end up graduating high school. Some of them get little scholarships. So, you know, all the things that we needed growing up, even though we grew up in a small rural town, we had usually the preacher or, you know, your next door neighbor. That's when a village really did raise the neighborhood. Now we don't get that so much. So I try to reach out to, you know, all the entities that really, really need it and support it that way.
Max, anything else for Worthy?
Well, the thing that you're talking about holding baggage, it was this year in the game that the Celtics played, and I think that's when Jason Tatum tore LeBron and everybody a new ass out there. And the Celtics ended up losing that game by a couple of points. Well, anyway, they go to the studio, and who is lighting up a victory cigar on the air? That, again, this, he ain't even playing.
Hey, that's the worthy clap right there, baby. That's the worthy clap.
I'm like you, man. I got a new job now, man. Radio, it's a new career, man. So I have this thing, every time we play the Celtics, I say, we gonna get that Celtic ass. And then if we win, I light up a cigar. For that one time, we didn't allow Red Auerbach to light up that cigar. He had it in his mouth in 85. He walked off the court with it. So that's where I got it from. My tribute to Red.
Okay, I got it. Well, dude, right, you know what? It is always, well, y'all say it now, it's a pleasure. You will always be my guy. We go back, you know, wherever it is, North Carolina, we talk about race relations and all those things, but you and I have gone through a different path in different areas, and I'm just happy to see that you're successful. I'll say it in the most honest, respectful way. You still went to the dark side, but, you know, I still you, hey. And I congratulated you once you became an MVP.
Well, let me tell you this. Are you still there, Sid?
Yeah, we're here.
I'm going to end with this. Since I went to the dark side, I just want to say one thing. I am your father.
Again, please hit that subscription button. The way you automatically get the latest episodes as soon as they're released, and please make sure to give us a rating. You can also add some type of unique clothes like, hey, this is Coop with Maxwell, Big Game James, my boy AT. We out.
The Showtime Podcast with Michael Cooper is brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network.